Does anyone ever say you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer in women of 50. It doesn't always cause symptoms you may not know you have. Only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous lumps so they can be removed before they turn to cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer in early stage when the chance of full recovery is very high. Check with your doctor and test colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the pure of health.
Did you receive email in the IRS in your tax run? If so, open it. The IRS does not request penal information by email. Hello, I'm Rujor, Treasury Inspector General of Tax Administration. IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS email and websites that look or not. These emails are schemes played across who are to steal money and identity. Fall victim to it, you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess made of your good name and credit record. Helps these crooks from ripping full off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. It's IRS.gov or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
rates with the silver standard. That's my words, not yours.
Well, let's see. I'm looking at a total of all 28 states that have voter verified paper records. So
okay.
I think the ones that we didn't name before were Vermont, Utah, South Dakota, Oregon, Ohio, North Carolina. I think we named New Hampshire, Nevada, New Jersey. We may have gotten all of them that time.
Okay. Now, as I understand it, there's no audit requirement to make sure that it's working, but if it's a close election, you can still look at the paper and the paper is still the ballot of record. Is that right?
Well, I would have to look at the individual laws in those states to see if it is officially the ballot of record.
Mm-hmm.
But all those states do require the VVPR. And that's right. It does allow for recovery in the case of any system failure. In North Carolina, for example, in a past election, more than 4,400 votes were lost from a single paperless electronic voting machine. And there was a race that had a margin of error far less than that, which, of course, led to protracted disputes over who won and who lost. North Carolina now has a requirement for a voter-verified paper record, specifically to avoid that type of situation.
It's amazing to me that states seem to have a problem, and a pretty severe problem, before they realize an issue that you've been working on for many years, that I've been working on for many years myself. The bronze standard, I guess, is the next level is there are certain regulations that require some kind of voter paper record. Is that right?
Well, some of the states that I just listed actually use regulations to require voter verified paper record and make audits. There are also some states that have voluntarily purchased voter verifiable systems statewide, even though there's not requirement. So there are a number of states that have this, despite having passed a law, for example.
Now, according to your website, there's a total of 35 states, and this is as of July, so it may have changed since then, but 35 states that are currently using the paper verified record?
I think that sounds about right. I'd actually have to consult our website for the total. I can name the additional states that bought voter verifiable systems even without a requirement.
Okay, but are they in use for tomorrow's election, or is it like New Mexico where we're waiting for the future?
I think in most of those places it is in use for tomorrow's election. Tomorrow is the first full federal election since implementation of the Help America Vote Act, and a lot of these newly purchased systems were purchased in order for states to come into compliance with HAVA.
Now, compare it, if you will, to the election of 2004, just so people can realize what progress we have made. How many states had the voter verified records in 2004?
I don't know the number right offhand, but it was certainly far less than this number.
I think it was a handful, like five or six.
It really was a handful. So state legislatures have really taken the lead in terms of moving forward with these requirements. And I think it's important that all of us at the local level push for these important safeguards to our voting systems, because ultimately change at the federal level will be made all the more likely if our states and our counties begin to adopt these practices now.
Okay, let's talk about the states that get an F. No gold, no silver, no bronze. They just fail. I've just mixed metaphors, but that's okay. What's interesting to me is many of these states have very close Senate races, some governor races, states that we might expect, like Florida and Texas. A lot of them are in the South. According to your website, Georgia, South Carolina, Louisiana, Tennessee, which has a very close race, Virginia and Maryland, which both have close races that surround Washington, D.C. I'm surrounded by the recalcitrant states, Kentucky, Indiana, Kansas, Pennsylvania, and Iowa, looks like, from your website. They have nothing? Well, what do they have? They have the Diebold machines?
Let's see. In Iowa, I think I would have to go back and consult our website for exactly what their precise requirements are. We have a variety of information posted at verifiedvoting.org. Georgia and Maryland, for example, have fully paperless electronic voting systems in place statewide. And Maryland, of course, had a number of problems in its primaries just this year. So I think these are places where we should be concerned, and concerned not only about the problems that we're going to see, but about the problems that we won't see because these voting systems don't offer enough transparency.
Well, people are very concerned. I know my listeners are very concerned about the possibility of hacking, and I've seen the Princeton video. I've read part of the Berkeley studies. Of course, in Maryland, the problem was they didn't even bring the voter cards. They forgot them in the primary a couple months ago. And people had to resort to paper ballots, but some offered them, some didn't offer them. In terms of these 15 states, they are, correct me if I'm wrong, they're all electronic, and none of them have paper. What safeguards are there to protect people's votes in these states?
Well, let me go back for just a second.
Sure.
Because some of these states that don't have a voter-verified paper record or manual auditing requirements do have paper in place in some of the counties.
Okay.
So we'll take Florida, for example. Florida does not have a statewide requirement, and a lot of the counties have no voter-verified paper record, but some of the counties do. So some of them are a bit of a mix.
Of course, that's unequal. I mean, the irony is that Florida is the state that the Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore said that if you know, that the worry is that some people might count some things differently, so, you know, Bush wins. and yet you're saying that basically in Florida, some people have a paper record. They're sure their vote's going to count. And other folks, they're lucky if the thing isn't hacked.
Well, that is the irony. And throughout our country, there are several crucial steps in our electoral process that simply haven't been put into place in an equitable manner, both with regard to registration and with regard to how the votes are cast and counted. And that is definitely a concern.
Let me move back to Florida. One of my heroes, if you will, is in the state of Florida. His name is Ian Sancho. I know you know who he is. He's the supervisor of Leon County, which includes the capital of Tallahassee, Florida. Ian Sancho has been on the Inside Scoop, I think, three times now, each time desperately describing his fierce battles with the state legislature, because he very firmly believes in a voter-verified paper ballot, but the Republican state legislature is just as determined to basically stuff Diebold or some other voting machine down his throat. What's going on in Tallahassee?
Well, the situation in Leon County points to problems with both the certification and testing processes for voting machines. Those testing and certification processes just aren't catching all of the security flaws and potential failures of these voting machines. The hack that Ian Sancho permitted in Leon County from computer scientist Harry Hursty showed a vulnerability there with that particular voting equipment. And after that, because of the small number of vendors, it became very difficult in that county for them to get the equipment that they needed in order to come into compliance with the Help America Vote Act. Fortunately, those problems were remedied, but the bottom line is that our testing and certification processes need to be overhauled. And also, we need to tie to the testing and certification issues some vendor concerns, such as, number one, vendor capacity to fulfill all the contracts that are taken, and the willingness of the vendors to do business with election officials throughout the country.
Well, I read, for example, that in Maryland, they want, because of the problems that happened in the primary, they want enough paper ballots as backup just in case the system fails again. A number of people, in fact, both parties of Maryland, recommended that everyone vote absentee. And then Diebold apparently also prints the absentee ballot forms and said, we can't get the paper out enough. Now, you know, I can go to Kinko's, and I could probably get, I don't know, 100,000 copies in 24 hours, I would think. Diebold can't print enough voting records? What's with this?
Well, there have been huge problems in general with various types of voting. We certainly do encourage the provision of backup paper ballots for use in emergencies in cases of machine failure. And with regard to absentee balloting is also a process that requires having checks and balances in place. And sometimes there are issues with whoever is printing the ballot. Sometimes there are problems on the election official end. And whether or not that process gets administered properly largely depends on the jurisdiction in which people live. In South Florida in 2004, for example, a very large number of voters never received their paper ballots in time to get them back by the deadline to be counted, and thus were simply disenfranchised. So in some cases, absentee balloting does offer that voter-verified paper record backup where there are paperless electronic voting systems at the polling places. In a few places, that system itself can be problematic on some fronts.
So what's happening with my friend Ian Sancho? What's going on in Leon County? I'm curious. Do you know?
I don't know the latest there from Leon County. My understanding is he did get the equipment that he needed for this election. And certainly
with a paper record and all?
I believe that Leon County uses optical scan,
okay,
if I'm not mistaken.
Well, there you go. There,
does
there's
have
a paper record.
Verified paper record. That's right.
Good. I'm glad. At least it's counting to me, though, that we have so many close elections in Virginia, in Maryland, in Tennessee, and all in these states that don't have the verified paper trail. And, it, you know, what happens if election day we have a neck-and-neck election? How do you determine who won? I mean, that you just sort of trust the machines?
Well, it certainly does make for a dangerous situation. You know, one of the things that can be done on election day, although this in itself is a pretty complicated process to put in place, is to parallel test the voting machines. That is, randomly selecting voting machines and pulling them out of active duty, if you will, on election day and having test ballots cast on those to see if the machines are working properly. But that is something that really can't be implemented on short notice. Basically, I think the key in counties with paperless electronic systems is to do everything possible to minimize any errors that might happen on the human side in order to make sure that at least the electronic systems are being deployed correctly. But it is a scary situation where there is not that safety net in place where voter intent can be recovered.
Courtney, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to give specific advice to our audience, both people who live in paper record areas and non-paper record areas, as to what they can do on election day to protect their right to vote and maybe even to protect others' right to vote as well. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this. What they can do on election day to protect their right to vote and maybe even to protect others' right to vote as well. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after.
Keep in mind that windows play a big part, so it's important to get the right ones. Anderson not only offers finely crafted windows and patio doors in thousands of sizes and styles, they also give you natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and long-lasting, energy-saving performance. Stop in and see the full line of Anderson Windows at J.T. Hurst & Company, a division of T.W. Perry. The pros at J.T. Hurst can locate a contractor to do the job for you or give you some helpful tips on how you can do it yourself. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first, a division of T.W. Perry. On Catoctin Circle in Leesburg, Anderson Windows. Long live the home.
How many different organizations list you as a member? You might be a member of a sports team, a book club, travel or CD club. But what does that membership really mean? Does membership in the book club allow you to vote on who runs the organization? Can you help shape the long-term future of your CD club? I don't think so. You can, however, shape the future of your electric company. That is, if you're a NOVEC customer. NOVEC, Northern Virginia Electric Cooperative, is owned by the consumers we serve and governed by a board of directors elected from the membership. Pretty cool, huh? But wait, there's more. NOVEC's customers share in the company's profits. Last year, we distributed more than $9.1 million in capital credits to our membership. The power to vote and a share of the profits. Membership doesn't get much better than this. NOVEC, locally based and member-owned. For a list of customer services, answers to your questions, and even employment opportunities, visit our website at www.novec.com.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Tomorrow, of course, is Election Day. But the question is, will your vote be counted? In some states, there is a voter verified paper record. In some states, there's not. I, of course, have long been advocating for a federal standard. And I'm glad to give you some good news. 13 states have the gold standard. Some 35 states have some sort of paper record. But unfortunately, the states that may determine the election, states like Virginia and Maryland, have no paper records at all, and it's going to be problematic. My guest is Courtney Strickland-Bhatia. She is the president of VerifiedVoting.org. There's a wealth of information on their website, which I've linked to from my website, and you should, really should check that out, including what you can do as a citizen to help people like Courtney Strickland-Bhatia on Election Day. Ms. Bhatia, welcome again to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks very much.
Let's start with the gold standard people, if you will, the lucky people. Let's a state like California. Now, they have optical scanners, the kind where you fill in the ovals and you stick it in the machine. Is that right?
Actually, some counties in California have optical scan systems, and others have DREs, direct recording electronic touchscreen systems, but ones that have a voter verified paper audit trail.
Okay, so that means that for those voters, they just simply look at their vote and stick it in a box. Now the optical scan machines, at the end of the day, I understand the paper record is the record, is the authority. But what if someone has hacked the machine? What if someone has hacked an optical scanning machine? Unless you actually count those paper ballots, you won't know it's been hacked, right?
Well, the good thing is that California also does have that requirement to manually audit 1% of the precincts. And so the premise behind that is basically random sampling, that if you choose a select number of the precincts and then you hand count some of those paper ballots and compare it to the machine totals, then you'll know whether everything is operating accurately. Now, the important part is that is to not only audit the voting machines on which the voters cast ballots in places where that happens, but also to audit the tabulating machines as well, so that we know that the vote totals are being added up correctly. We need to really encourage that both of those types of audits happen.
Now, who does the audits? I mean, sometimes if the cop is on the take, then you don't get much policing there. Can citizens actually watch this auditing?
Citizens can watch the audits, and in fact, our Election Transparency Project is really built in order to encourage citizens to observe some parts of the electoral process that happen outside of polling place hours on Election Day, because there is so much more to watch, and just by having the presence of people there monitoring the situation, that can really make a difference in how the audits are conducted and how any part of the electoral process is run.
So let's say I'm a citizen in a gold standard state. Again, my words, not yours. But I'm in a citizen in a state with a voter verified paper trail, and I want to check. I want to actually see in my precinct there were 233 votes, and they came out with 133 to 100 was what the machine said. And I'd like to actually look and see the paper and see if the paper matches the electronic count. Can I do that?
Well, you can go and observe while the audits are being conducted. Now, of course, it's important that we safeguard voters' privacy in casting the ballots, but citizens can absolutely watch and observe the canvassing of the ballots and the auditing of those ballots. And in fact, we have a questionnaire on our website called an audit observation questionnaire that will guide citizens through the process of collecting crucial information of how the audits are being conducted.
So I call my local elections registrar in my county and ask them if I can observe. Is that how it works?
That's right. The best thing to do would be to call now, inform them that you would like to observe the process, and find out when and where that will be taking place. In California, that process is at various times between the time the polls close on Election Day and when the election results are certified. So it happens pretty quickly after the election, and you would want to find out now where and when that would
well,
be.
Well, after the election, I assume I can just hang around at 7 p.m. when the polls close at my precinct and say, hey, I want to watch you count the votes?
You can do that, too. And actually, we have a questionnaire that assists people in observing that process, which we call poll closing and ballot accounting. And most places, by the time the polls close, poll workers will tally the votes from that precinct, and they will also oftentimes add up the number of people who actually signed in to cast a ballot. And by comparing the number of people who signed in versus the number of votes actually cast, we can sometimes get a pretty good read on whether or not the system is functioning properly. In Miami-Dade County, for example, in 2004, the Miami-Dade Election Reform Coalition uncovered a situation where the vote totals from one machine had been added three times into the certified count, and not through any malicious intent, but because the machine kept crashing and poll workers did not realize that each time it was rebooted, it added its vote totals into the count.
And they didn't call to check? I mean, you know, you'd think that'd be a crucial thing where they would call the state, Secretary of State, I guess it is, and say, hey, did you get our vote totals? Our machine crashed.
Well, because election observers were there, and because of public records laws that permit requesting a lot of information like this, the problem was able to be uncovered. But certainly, if there's a discrepancy between the number of people signing in and the number of ballots cast, then that is a big red flag that needs to be addressed.
Now, I assume I can also go to my voting place early at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m., whenever it opens in my state, and say, you know what, I'd like to see you check the count to make sure that it's 0-0 before we start this thing.
In a lot of places you can. Now, we should say here that the rules differ in different counties and different states for exactly who can observe what. For example, during actual polling place hours, in some places it's necessary to have credentials or to be a registered poll watcher with one of the parties or with a political, a registered PAC.
But I can go to my political party, right, and say, hey, I'd like to watch the voting, either the pre-election day process or the post-election day voting process in my precinct. Can you sign me a credential? And they'll usually do that, I would think.
Yes, that is one way to go. In certain places like California, it's not necessary to have credentials at all. And for example, in Florida, anybody can go and observe the poll closing, even though credentials are required during polling place hours. So it's important to just call and find out what the requirements are for your location, and then to take appropriate steps in order to ensure access. Some of that information is also available on our website.
Now, you said that you could, for example, go watch the audit in California, but I see a catch-22 here, because I would think the audits have to be random, and you can't know what precinct's going to be audited ahead of time, because, heck, if you knew that, then if you're a hacker, you simply avoid those precincts. So there's no real way to know where it's going to be audited, right?
Well, actually, there is, because usually what happens is the audit is done after the precinct totals have been sent to the central location where the tabulating is occurring for the county, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's usually at that location that they're going to randomly select precincts, and then they're going to pull the ballots for those particular precincts.
I see. So the audit is after the fact. It doesn't happen during election day.
It's after the fact, and it's usually at the central location or at some other, specific location, but not at the polling places on election day.
Now, the ballots saved, I would hope they're not thrown away. I mean, can I, Freedom Information Act or whatever, or you, an organization, after the election's over, say, you know what, just to be fair, I want to count 100% of the ballots and just see if you got it right.
Different places have different rules for how long ballots are saved. But in most places, they are saved. It does depend to some degree on that particular jurisdiction's public records laws. Another thing is that, for example, in Florida in 2002, it was possible to request the sign-in sheets, the precinct rolls where people sign in to vote.
Yeah.
And by counting the number of people signing in versus the number of votes cast, the ACLU of Florida, for example, was able to determine that machine problems in 2002 had a disproportionate impact on minority communities. So, again, all of this points to the importance of transparency, the importance of being able to get the information, and the importance of having transparent equipment that provides a voter verified paper record, transparent processes, for example, the manual auditing of that paper record, and also transparent laws, laws that really permit the free flow of information to the voters themselves, to the stakeholders.
And I don't know whether you mentioned the transparency of the open source code of the machines themselves.
That is another excellent point. It's not just about the hardware, it's also about the software.
Now, a lot of my listeners in the Washington, D.C. area are going to vote in Virginia or Maryland, two states who are at the opposite end of the scale. They have all have election machines. They do not have voter verified paper records. What can we do, we citizens of Virginia and Maryland? You know, we understand we can advocate for change, but it's too late. It's tomorrow. There's election day. What can we do to help assure that our voting machines are not being hacked?
Well, there are a few basic things to do just in order to make sure that you don't experience any undue problems on election day. The first one is make sure that you're registered to vote. If you have any doubt about this, contact your local elections office. And then the second
thing... And folks, by the way, do that today. Don't do it tomorrow. I mean, you could try tomorrow if you're really desperate, but tomorrow elections officials have... Whenever I call on election day, the line's busy. I work as a lawyer to help voters. Please, if you have any questions about your registration, if there's any doubt in your mind, maybe you moved recently, or even in the last 3-4 years you moved, call your registrar today because it's going to be hard to reach them tomorrow.
That's definitely true. And then the other thing to be sure to find out today, if you don't already know, is where do you go to vote? Polling places change quite frequently. So it is possible that your polling place may be the same as the last election, or it might not be. And it's really good to check that out. You can call your local elections office today about that, or you can actually go to a website that's listed on our website, which is vote411.org, to find your polling place location.
That's
you will also want to be sure to take with you identification. Under the Help America Vote Act, different states have different requirements now for identification. Common Cause has some information posted on their website about what identification you need to bring, but that's a very important step.
And let me advise people, do not leave. I mean, unless you're going to another voting place, another precinct, just don't ever give up on voting that day. I know that there's different rules statewide. For example, in California, if you vote outside your precinct, they will count your – you shouldn't do this on purpose, folks, because it's a go-through. But in essence, they will count your vote outside your precinct. You can't vote for anyone you're not allowed to vote for. If you vote in a wrong congressional district, they would only count the statewide race. In Virginia, though, you can be voting just one precinct over, just across the line, for the exact same slate of candidates, and they will throw your vote in the trash. They literally will not count your vote. You can vote provisionally. It will not be counted. So knowing where you're required to vote is very, very important. I want to encourage people to go to Courtney's website. I'm going to let people know what I'm doing tomorrow, and then sort of see how Courtney can help me or help you if you want to do similar things to what I'm doing. I'm acting as a voter elections attorney in Virginia. I'm going to be there at the polls with armed with Virginia law, and if people have problems or are not allowed to vote or there are problems with machines, I'm going to be there standing by to call my state Democratic Party and let them know what's going on. That's happening throughout the country, and you don't have to be a lawyer to do it, folks. Really, anyone can do it. It's just a matter of getting up in the cold. Well, it might not be cold where you live, but it's cold here, and staying there really all day election day. It's mostly a boring job, folks, but you're there with a sign. It also makes people feel very comfortable because they know if there's a problem, they can come out and tell you about it. Now, Courtney, are you helping that army of lawyers and other good citizens with your organization?
Through our Election Transparency Project, there are observation tools that people can still download today and print out and take to the polls with them. There are two in which people might be particularly interested for tomorrow. One is the poll closing and ballot accounting questionnaire that we discussed earlier. People can print that off our website. They can take it with them at the time the polls close in their location and collect crucial information by just answering the questions on that questionnaire.
Now, who do they ask those questions to? Because some of them are pretty complicated. I've seen your questionnaire. The registrar might be busy at that time. How do they get answers?
Well, actually, if they're going to the polls and observing poll closing, a lot of that information is going to come out during the process that the poll workers go through to shut down the polling place. It is useful to go with a partner if possible. An individual can do it, but going with someone else allows you to kind of double team and collect information that may be coming out simultaneously. And you might have to ask the poll workers, while obviously not interfering with the process and while obeying the rules, you might have to ask the poll workers for some of those answers. It's not necessary to answer every question, so don't feel bad if you can't do that. We're happy to get the information that you are able to collect. And we also do have a questionnaire that people can take with them tomorrow that assesses the level of access to the voting process for persons with disabilities. And that's also downloadable on our site in three different versions, and people can take that to the polls with them when they go to vote and collect information on whether the polling place is accessible, whether the accessible equipment for voting for persons with disabilities is functioning well, and a variety of other information.
Now, of course, the most infamous election problem is Florida 2000 Palm Beach County, the butterfly ballot, where really 10,000 votes, it's pretty clear, were misplaced. There's no question that the majority of Floridians wanted Gore to be president. They just didn't get their votes counted, and that mistake wasn't really caught till 10, 11 a.m. By the time they put signs in there, those votes were irrevocably lost. If you are at a polling place and you see something going wrong, even if you're not there to observe like I officially am, and you don't have to be there officially, as Courtney points out, you can just download the forms and help out. But let's say you're there, you're standing in line, and someone says, ooh, this machine lost power. Or, hey, it's flipping my vote. I tried to pull the lever for this candidate, and it's showing me on the summary page, this other candidate, what's going on here. Or this paper ballot doesn't match what I typed in. Even if you hear someone else saying that, what can a good citizen do if they hear that kind of stuff going on to help us and help you make sure the vote's accurate?
There are two basic things to do, maybe three. First of all, be sure to check your ballot and check your ballot again. We have already had reports of vote hopping where a person touches one candidate and goes to other in at least three different states.
What states, by
more.
The way? Do you know offhand?
South Carolina, Arkansas, and Florida are places where I've read news reports.
Yeah, I heard about Florida. That's the only one I knew.
So these reports are coming in. It's very important to double check that your choices are being accurately recorded. Secondly, by all means, report any problems that you experience to the poll workers at the polling place. For example, if a printer jams on an electronic voting machine that has a printer, report that immediately. If a machine is not working, report that immediately. That way we can save any other voters from suffering those same problems.
And let me go one step further, folks. It doesn't just have to happen to you. I mean, a lot of us listening to this show are a little more proactive than a lot of people. You may have an elderly voter. You may have a voter that has some difficulty with English or a voter that simply doesn't want to muck with the system, and you might hear them say, hey, this thing's flipping my vote. There's a toll-free number that's out there, 866-OUR-VOTE. I don't think that's your organization, though, Courtney. But I know that it's out there, 866-O-U-R-V-O-T-E, to report any national problem. And I think that, I don't remember if it's the Democratic Party or that's simply...
That's the Election Protection Coalition.
That's what that is.
And
yes.
That is a great number to call. That is a database of incidents that are occurring all over the country. And the goal is not just to protect the vote on Election Day, which obviously that is one of the primary goals, but it is also so that we can gather data again and improve our elections going forward. That's something that our Election Transparency Project is geared to do. That's something that phone number is geared to do. And we need both of those. So if you experience a problem, call that number, 1-866-OUR-VOTE, and also make sure to alert the poll workers and your local election official.
Yeah, you know, sometimes if you just simply use that number and say to the poll worker, if you don't fix this problem, I'm going to call 866-OUR-VOTE. That's, again, I want to urge people to be even a little more proactive. You don't want to be rude, but you can be firm, because it may be something happening to someone else, and you hear it happening. I'd go ahead and err on the side of reporting it and give people a full chance to find out if this, if nothing's gone wrong, then they'll dismiss it. But please don't hesitate to protect your own democracy. I'll tell you, one of my big concerns is the state of Florida, Courtney, because Clint Curtis, who's running for Congress against Tom Feeney, he's been on my show as well. He, of course, is the software developer that says that Tom Feeney, then the head of the Florida House, currently congressman, ordered him to develop software that would manipulate elections. And it's ironic that he's running against this very same person in an election. But Florida seems to be, sorry if you're from there, but one of the most crooked states in this process. It seems that whenever we hear of problems, most of the time it goes back to Florida. Are there unique things about Florida, Courtney, that make it one of the worst states there?
Well, Florida is kind of an example of all the areas in which change has to take place in order for us to get the transparent voting process that we need. We need changes in the technology and the voting equipment. We need changes in the procedures. We need changes in the laws. And Florida has problems in all of those areas. Florida, for example, is one of very few states that takes away the right to vote from people with a felony conviction for life unless it's given back by the governor. Florida has many locations with paperless electronic voting systems. Florida's procedures, such as putting poll monitors more than 100 feet outside the polling place, it used to be 50 feet, you know, that pushes people who might be able to help or even further out than they were before. It's just a perfect example of the types of reforms that need to happen in terms of laws, procedures, and technology.
Let me end on a slightly more optimistic note. I do think, assuming we have a fair election, and that's not at all clear, but if we have a fair election, I think the Democrats will take the House. I think they've got a decent shot, though by no means certain of taking the Senate. That one's a lot tougher. But I know that, for example, Rush Holt's bill has majority support in the House. It's just that having a majority in the House isn't enough unless you control the majority to get it before a vote. If that bill becomes law, is that basically what your organization is seeking, or would you seek even more than that?
Well, it will be more than that. However, passage of H.R. 550, Rush Holt's bill, would be a wonderful thing because it would mandate voter-verified paper records and manual audits nationwide. That's something that we're really encouraging and have worked hard to lobby for and support. But that will be the start of the process. And really, going forward, we need people to not only get out and vote, but also get out and observe.
Now, can they take a video camera? I mean, how much can they observe?
It depends on the state, again, so it's worth checking out what the rules in your particular location are. But at many points, videotape is permitted. And Voter Action, for example, has an 800 number, which is also posted on our website. I should say a toll-free number, where people can call to request information on the laws in their area or to report DRE-related voting machine problems in particular. So that information is available, and in places where it is lawful to videotape, that is a wonderful thing to do because it really does get that firsthand account.
So bottom line, how can we know tomorrow if in the 15 bad states, if you will, or in any of the 50 states, if the vote that we see at the end of the day is actually the vote people did? I mean, how confident can people be going into the elections tomorrow?
Well, unfortunately, in some places that lack transparent equipment with a voter-verified paper record, there is no way to tell 100% for sure that there were not problems due to either just machine error or fraud of some sort. The best thing that we can do is to collect information on the process so that we can document what happens. If we can't document what happens, it'll be very difficult for us to know or to be able to advocate for how to change things.
One last thing that you mentioned on your website that I think is very important, folks, and it has to do, frankly, with the way Clint Curtis described the hacking mechanism that Tom Feeney asked him to develop. And that is what they would do is they would increase the turnout, to increase it electronically rather than actually, in Republican areas. So the way it worked, he said, is if Fort Lauderdale was going to vote for the Democrats anyway, they would take the same percentage vote for the Democrats, but Kerry 60, Bush 40, but they would depress the overall turnout and increase it in rural counties, Pensacola, which are very Republican. It would seem to me that simply to compare the number of people who signed in to vote with the totals, if 233 people signed in to vote and 326 votes came out, you know that there's something going on there. And one of the things that Courtney Strickland-Bhatia recommends on her website is when you go in at the end of the day, stick around, particularly if you're going to vote at the end of the day, go into your polling place, go in there, it closes most of the time at 7, and ask to check the voter rolls and compare it to the totals. That's something very simple. It's a number. They should be able to give it to you. And if the voting's accurate, it should match on the dot. Now, it is possible that someone did vote in an election or something, so you might have 232 names and 235 votes, but it shouldn't differ by that much, should it, Courtney?
It really shouldn't differ by that much. It is possible for somebody to sign in and then leave without voting, although that is fairly unlikely. It is necessary to also get the poll workers to tell you how many absentee ballots were dropped off at the polling place,
okay,
how many provisional ballots were cast.
Fair enough.
But our questionnaire really will guide you through all those steps of the process, and that information will allow us to take a look later on and see, you know, how many precincts did have significant discrepancies and what was the nature of that and how can we fix it.
It's all at verifiedvoting.org. It's a terrific resource. And, folks, I really want to encourage you, check out this website. You can play a role not just in voting tomorrow. Listen, my listeners, everyone I expect to vote, my listeners, I expect something more. Do kind of what I'm doing. Protect not just your right to vote, but everyone's right to vote. Don't just vote tomorrow. Stick around after in your precinct. Maybe check out another precinct. Ask to see the vote totals. Ask to compare to the voters that signed in and play a role in helping American democracy. Courtney Strickland-Bhatia, thank you so much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Listen, folks, tonight at 7 p.m., we're going to go over the Virginia races on the television show with all the details of George Allen and Jim Webb. And then tomorrow on Election Day, I'll be reporting exactly what I find in my checking the voting machines in Virginia. Don't miss that. 2 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Mark Levine signing off.